Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 16. I'm Dan Tomlinson. Joining me, as always, is Rich Harrison, aka Pommy. Rich, how you doing, pal?
I'm well, mate. And you?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Just trying to process another crazy, batshit crazy, where I had rugby league weekend.
Yes. Yeah. It's the sport that keeps on giving, isn't it?
He couldn't write this shit. You know, if it's like a Hollywood blockbuster movie, you just can't write these scripts sometimes. And yeah, the way the game's going, you know, and you look at it down under where you live right now, and you think, you know, these set restarts that are influencing the game, the fact that some clubs are just absolutely shite influences the games as well, obviously, but also the stuff about the head eye things right now, and obviously we'll dive into this later when we do the NRL. But the one that stands out for me this weekend was Siya Sakitakioho. What the hell is he supposed to do when an opponent in Nathan Cleary slips into him and gets sin bin for that, and that swings the game?
He was, what, 6 inches off the floor, you know, and horizontal
by
the time you made contact with him. I mean,
it's not the game that I grew up with. You're probably thinking, get a grip, Dan. You know, think back to when the game in the 1980s, the game in the 1990s. It's completely different. And I sort of get it. I mean, I've got a pal called Ian Fresh who says the game's nothing compared to when he watched it in the 60s and the 70s. And I sort of look at him thinking, what you're on about? And, you know, I get it. Because when it changes that much, it's just frustrating. It really is. I mean, I watch the NRL now. I used to watch it religiously. Now I'm lucky if I put two or three games on a weekend. And this has been the case for the past month now.
Yeah, well, it is a different game. And you're right. And rugby league's always done that, mate. It's always changed. not always for the better, has to be said. But, you know, I mean, you know, my old man will still talk about the days of unlimited tackles, you know, before the six-tackle rule came in. And when I first started watching, it was 3 points for a try. I mean, I was a nipper when that was. I was like, you know, 5 or 6 years old when they changed to 4 points for a try. But, you know, all of that probably changed the game for the better, because, you know, before that, you know, you had the only time you ever saw the ball was in a scrum. So there were contested scrums, and they had to be contested because that's how you won the ball. You know, if there was a knock on or the ball went into touch or whatever, that was the only time you ever got a chance to regain possession, because unlimited tackles, you'd have a team that would just cart it up and down the pitch all day, you know. And so your forwards were just that. They were just workhorses. They were just battering rams, you know. So, yeah, it's very, very different now. And look, it's a better game now than it ever has been. It's just this last 2 years, over COVID, they've really tried to speed the game up, make it look fantastic, really try and grasp the nettle and make the game look as good as it possibly could be. But they've missed the mark. And the problem that you've got is that when you start to pick the eyes out of every single thing that's happening on the pitch, I mean, it's not quite reached Super League yet, but at the moment, referee awards a try and then the bunker checks it in every game of NRL. So there's none of this making a square with your fingers and going to the big screen. You know, it's all the try is given and then the bunker checks it. And, you know, the score goes up on the scoreboard, 4-0 up. And then if the bunker checks it and finds that there's been a minuscule knock on or someone's put the foot in touch, gets chalked off and the score goes back down to zero. That's weird. And that can happen in Super League because not every game's televised like it is over here. So, you know, you've got one rule for one and one rule for another, and the international game will suffer because you're playing under two different sets of rules.
Rugby league, wow.
And, you know, you're picking England people, picking English people for an All-Stars team, apparently.
This is nuts. Oh no, Jake Connor had a Jamaican father. I didn't know that, he was born and bred in Halifax, but I didn't know he was half Jamaican. Turns out he could play against England, a side that he's played 5 tests for, not to mention, you know, 2 or 3 for Great Britain as well. Now he's going to line up against them.
Do you know what, though? If he has got a Jamaican father, there's every chance then, if he doesn't get picked in Wayne's squad for the World Cup, which it's not looking like he will, let's face it. Obviously, Sean Wayne's got something against him. You know, there's obviously some sort of technical thing that he doesn't like about Connor, or maybe it's his temperament, or maybe Connor's bad-mouthed him, or they've had arguments in the past. You don't know, do you? But, you know, there's a Jamaican team in that World Cup. Maybe Connor will turn out for them.
I was just trying to process that now in my head. Jake Connor lining up for Jamaica.
Jake Connor, reggae boy.
I hope he comes in like with the, you know, all the Caribbean threads and everything.
Yeah, yeah, the dreads and the full lot, yeah.
Full lot, yeah. Just go full on Bob Marley. It'd be brilliant. Oh, I just I love this game. Absolutely love it. As we all do. You know, every listening to this podcast loves rugby league. And we want the best for it. Yeah. And you watch the game and it's the best sport on the planet. But we say it all the time, the administration on both sides of the world is absolutely horrendous. It holds the game back.
Amateurish.
Yeah. It's run by monkeys, honestly. I actually think monkeys could do a better job, actually. But it's, I can't fathom it. It just absolutely does my sweet in. And a lot of people, when these set restarts came into play, said, you know, be careful what you wish for. The game was perfect. We said it all the time. You know, why fix what's not broken? And they brought him in, and I on Saturday afternoon, must admit, we started this with a massive rugby league rant after Hull put a 64-22, 12-try massacre on Lee on Saturday afternoon. We started this podcast ranting like this. But it's the state of the game.
Let's go back to the feel-good.
Yeah. But you look at that. Hull got about, I think it was one or two set restarts. Lee got seven, despite dominating the game. You're thinking, how the hell does that work out? You watch an NRL side, where an NRL game, a team will go bang, 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 get four or five. Next minute, they're 24-0 up. And then a team gets bang, 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 bang. They score 48 unanswered points.
From what I saw of the league game, and I admit I listened to it via Humberside, I believe 1 o'clock in the morning, and I've seen kind of extended highlights. I think that's the reason why we didn't get many set restarts is that we didn't get tackled very much. Do you know what I mean? We were really in scores for fun, weren't we? So, and I think Lee have kind of, I don't know whether they haven't got the smarts or whatever to kind of try and slow the play the ball down. I just don't think they did slow our play the ball down, and that's why we put a big score on them. I think any team that would have been, any team that was a little bit more savvy around the play of the ball would probably have given away a few more set restarts. We'd have probably still scored the same amount of points, but it'd have been in a different form. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Yeah, because I mean, oh, it's funny because I went in the hospitality at Lee, and it was great to actually meet Derek Beaumont and got a different perspective of good old Derek. You know, really nice bloke. I'll give him that. And he brought former Salford Fruitcake Marwin Kilcash with him, and that was an eye opener. Sat, you know, having a meal with him doing a Q&A before the game. I was like, bloody hell. He said, "Oh yeah, I should team up with you, Derek, and we'll be the RFL's worst nightmare." And I'm thinking, Christ, please don't. But and Derek said, you know,
he's still looking for that £1 million, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
£1 million.
Oh, yeah.
He's
yeah,
still
he
looking
is.
For the check.
Yeah, he still wants to cash it in. Yeah. But yeah, where I'm going with this, Derek, he was talking about all before the game, and he said, it just sticks with me. He went, "Yeah, I look at Maya Fanua and I crap myself. I look at Manu Mau and I crap myself. Look at that Chris Sata and I want to run away." I'm like, "Yeah, don't we all, mate?" And he just said that.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously I want, you know, my Lafers to do well today and, you know, give it a crack, but we're up against a, you know, a really good side here. And that's how it panned out, wasn't it? I thought Hull just, they just overpowered them. And every ruck, they were dominating. But you're not telling me there wasn't hands in there, there wasn't, you know, some holding down. I mean, Hull just absolutely dominated the ruck. And when they did get slowed down, there was no set restarts. Lee got the ball back and the buzzer went straight away. I just don't understand it. I really don't.
This whole, you know, I think the referee thinks it's nice and easy to blow, you know, to wave a restart on the first tackle of every set and just make it a seven tackle set. I think that happens quite a lot, and especially because players are out of position when the ball's handed over a lot of the time. So I think it's the same over here. It's infected over here as well, exactly the same thing. And it's crap, and it's horrible look. You know, the problem is the whole set restart thing came about because Channel 9 wanted the game to be quicker.
Yeah.
It's the only reason. Channel 9 said to Volandis when he took over, "Look, we will re-sign. We will let we want to re-sign the NRL and everything through COVID. You know, we've given you all this money and we're not happy with the way that you've spent all this money. We want the game to be quicker and we want it to be more of a televisual event. So can you do..." So literally, two blokes in Channel 9 came up with it as a concept, ran it past a couple of the commentators and a couple of the pundits that Channel 9 use, including people like Gus Gould, who then took it to Volandis. And Volandis went, "Okay, give it to the referees." Referees went, "Yeah, easy, we can do that because we've got two referees." And Volandis said, "Ah, well, the other thing that they want is one referee." So half of you are out of work.
Yeah,
so literally, it was the TV people that changed it.
How can you be governed by a TV channel?
It's just ridiculous.
It's like rugby league. What are you doing? Honestly, it's the best game in the world, but it's run by absolute morons. And yeah, it's be careful what you wish for here. The game was perfect.
The whole thing with the All Stars, whatever they're calling it, that came about because you had a few supporters on Twitter and a few supporters in the press going, well, you know, we're not playing internationals at the moment because of COVID. These players are already over here. It's the perfect time to bring this game back. And everyone went, yeah, fantastic, what a great idea. The RFL have gone, yeah, fantastic, what a great idea. Let's play it on a weekend where the clubs are playing. No, it's got to be a standalone weekend. It has to be.
Well,
and if you haven't got room for a standalone weekend because of COVID, well, then now's not the time to bring it back.
Well, you look at it two ways here, don't you? You can say about the RFL, yep, you're absolutely right in what you said there. But then I'll also bring in, why did the Super League clubs agree to two pointless loop fixtures at the start of the season behind closed doors?
Yep.
There's two weekends that you could have had.
Well, in that case, you know, I'll tell you what else to do then. Play it on Challenge Cup weekend instead and just say that the two teams that are in the Challenge Cup final don't have players involved. Play it on the Challenge Cup weekend. Play it on the Sunday.
Well, yeah, that's a better option than what it is now. I mean, this is absolutely ludicrous.
You're literally playing it at the same time that there are Super League games on.
Which, from a PR point of view...
It's ridiculous. I mean, if you're a rugby league tragic like you are and like I am, you know, and you're a Hull supporter, you're going to be watching Hull Huddersfield. You're not going to be giving a shit about that, no matter whether Hull players are playing or not. You're going to be watching Hull and Huddersfield because that's your bread and butter.
Yeah.
And you'll set your Skybox to record the other one. You know, you're not going to go. You're not going to stay at home and watch it live on Sky instead of going to the game if you can go to the game, are you? Of course you're not. So what is it for? Is it for people that don't go to games? Is it for people that are outside the sphere of normal rugby league supporters that will watch something because it's got England branding on it? Well, you know, it's also right in the middle of the bloody Euro 2021, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's going to be soccer games against it as well. So playing it now is commercial suicide. Never mind anything else. It's commercially the wrong thing to do.
Why not sack off Magic Weekend and play it then? I mean, Magic for me is a contest that's passed its sell-by date, and obviously like it in Australia, they've had it for 3 years now, but for me...
And in Australia, mate, we haven't done it properly.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. It doesn't bother me, Magic. It hasn't for years. I mean, why not do that? But yeah, to have it on a weekend with the Super League fixtures is just nothing short of ludicrous. But in the current climate, when obviously COVID is still a thing in the UK, we have had... 3 confirmed Super League fixtures in the past fortnight. Obviously, Leeds, St Helens, Leeds, Catalans, and St Helens, Huddersfield. They was all called off. Yeah. We've now just had another one.
Are off as well,
Rovers and Saints is obviously off this week now. How can you have an environment where you've got literally players from, you know, dare I say, 9, 10 Super League clubs all mixing, then going back to the clubs?
Yes.
It's just, the logic behind it is crazy. It really is.
Yeah.
But it's rugby league, and it's the rugby league in the UK. It's nothing new. You know, this has been the case for, 126 years now. It'll never change, and it probably never will.
Yeah, true. True, true. And that's depressing.
It is.
Isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It is depressing.
Yeah, it is a game run by absolute monkeys. Not, as I say, that is new. Yeah. That is an injustice to every single one of the primate family, because, I like to say, most of them are probably more intelligent.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Especially the monkeys in the labs on the computers.
Who knew that those PG Tips adverts were actually closed circuit TV of what's going on at Redhall? it's like the draws, isn't it, for the cup and everything. And I know we've always laughed about it, and we've always, you know, I'm sure they've got the balls have been in the oven or the balls have been in the fridge or whatever. Now, you're not telling me that hasn't happened at some point, because where would that come from? You know, that's not just someone making that up, is it? That's obviously happened at some point, obviously. And, you know, we've just got that reputation for being, if not corrupt, then certainly corruptible, you know?
Or just incompetent. But then it's sort of thinking, how can you be that incompetent? It's like, how can you not get things like Challenge Cup draws? How many times has it been on, you know, national radio? I mean, there was one on the One Show once, and they even managed to bugger that up. It's like... Come on, lads. You just got a national TV spot there, or you get a national radio spot, and you still can't do it right. It's like,
it's
a cut draw. How hard is it to pull a few bloody balls out of a bag? It's like,
I know.
Come on.
I know.
But It's everything. It's everything in the game. You even think of the community game right now and the proposal for next year where they want to have every coach, every volunteer paying a membership to actually volunteer at the community club. Absolutely nuts. Yeah.
And never mind everything that's happened with the academy.
Yeah, you've got that stuff too. I
mean,
yeah.
You know, Hull, yeah, I mean, obviously Hull have been the beneficiaries of that, but, you know, it's disgraceful that you know, Rovers didn't get a bloody bar of that and other teams didn't get a bar of it as well. You know, it's just, that's wrong.
But then to
it's
announce wrong. That they have...
In a time when...
Yeah, but then they announced that, yeah, you know, 3 weeks later. Down. Yeah, they reversed the statement. So obviously...
Down.
It's like you've just literally... Yeah. You know, obviously, enough people have had a pop at you, you've now changed your mind, so... And then they put them on what, a provisional license or something. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a cop out, isn't it? You either do it or you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? It's like, what they call it, like partial circumcision. You know? It's all off or nothing off. You know, you can't do it halfway.
No, you really can't. And the timing of this England game, I mean, the fact that Jake Connor, from our point of view, now is playing against England. Qualifying for the exiles through a Jamaican dad.
You might do you know what I mean? You might as well put a target on his head. Honestly, who's not one going to crack him?
Well, the way I look at it now, is this like Sean Wayne's horrible, twisted idea of literally playing him against England, trying to get him wound up and maybe, you know, start a situation like what happened to Zach Hardacre when we played Wigan in the league game where he gives away that penalty. I must admit, that was where Jackson Hastings won it. But obviously, there was the incident with Zach Hardacre before half-time where he got sin-binned. It's like he's going to be on a hiding to nothing, isn't he? Because Wayne's going to tell him, you know, let's try to get under his skin, let's try to wind him up. But I must admit, that side to his game is a myth for me. He does run his mouth, don't get me wrong. It has the verbals, but, you know, I've got nothing wrong with that.
It works for him as often as it works against him.
But, barring that Wigan game, there hasn't been an incident like that this season. This is what I don't understand. They say, oh, there's a loose cannon, he's a ticking time bomb, but is he? It's like reputations, isn't it? You know, Gareth Fock got a reputation for being a thug, and every time he did a high tackle, he was off. You see Sean O'Loughlin, you know, hit you around the chops every week and nothing happened.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just one example.
Exactly. It's pantomime villains, is what it is, isn't it? It's having that pantomime villain. You know, in my era watching every game in the 90s, it was Kelvin Skerritt at Wigan. He was the one, you know, that everyone just went, oh, Jesus, here he comes, you know. And just, it was like that, you know. It was Adrian Morley for a while, you know, after he got sent off playing for Great Britain after, what, 9 seconds or whatever. You know, there's been pantomime villains for as long as the game has been played. And it's just, you know, these days when you've got microphones everywhere and everything and you hear a lot more of what's being said, you know. There was a game, was it against Warrington? There was a game against Warrington when he did something. And a couple of the Warrington players went looking for him. And because they were at his side of the pitch, Hull spread the ball the other way and scored.
It was Chris Hill. Yeah, it was Chris Hill. I remember
that.
Yeah,
it was Chris Hill. Yeah. Yeah, it was. You know, and it was, and that worked out beautifully because they were all after him to teach him a lesson and to grind his face into the turf. But, you know, while they were hunting him, the ball went out the back and we scored with 3-man overlap.
Yeah, I remember that. I think it was Carlos who scored that try out there. Yeah.
It was, yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, funny.
It's just, you know, it's... It's good to have one of them. And, you know, now we've got Reynolds as well. You know, it's like stereo, isn't it?
This is the ironic thing because it's like Josh Reynolds has literally took Jake Connor's role as being the biggest shithouser in the LFC side. You see Connor run his mouth, but he don't, you know, he's not in the limelight when he does it now. He sort of does it in backfield, whereas Reynolds don't care. There was Ryan Briley's first try when he scored for Lee. I was literally right in line with the whole players behind the post. Was like sort of in the corner of the best stand, and you could see Josh Reynolds giving it to the Lee players, and then the referee sort of went, "Hey, come on, mate, you know, pipe down." And he just went back and did it more. And there's a little coming together, you know, nothing sinister, just a couple of pushes, and then he's still going. And then he walks back over and gives it again. He never stops. Castleford last week, he's exactly the same.
He'll get under people's skin, mate. You know, and then it. You see, even if it's just he makes himself such a bloody nuisance that people want to go out the way and hit him, he'll accept that. He'll accept that as a risk, because all he's trying to do is just unnerving people. He's just getting under the skin. He's making them think twice. He's making them look over the shoulder. You know, he's just basically putting people off the game. And while they're thinking about him and thinking about how much they want to kill him, they're not thinking about catching the next pass, and they're not thinking about defensive structure and all the rest of it. You know, he's brilliant. It's fantastic. It's about bloody time. We haven't had anything like this for years. We haven't had a player like this for years. Now we've got two of them.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Exactly. And it all stems from that. You know, one thing that really impressed me at the Castleford game last week was the fight in Hull. And when it got tough, we didn't back down. We absolutely thrived off it. And that was the full side.
Yeah.
You know, it was obviously led by Reynolds, led by Connor, but the full side went with them. And the fight, fight in Hull, the fact that we never backed down now is one of the best things to watch about Brett Hodgson's Hull FC this year. And, I must admit, it was absolutely fantastic to, the enjoyment I got on Saturday watching us rip apart an opposition and score 12 tries. And some of them tries were nothing short of, sensational. Don't get me wrong, that was great to watch. That's like vintage, champagne rugby league. But to actually see the fight and the grubbiness in Hull right now, I love that. I'm absolutely in awe watching Hull when the going gets tough and you see them all, one and all in. It's absolutely brilliant. And long may that continue, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, back to Connor. You sort of look at it right now and you're thinking, right, okay. He's just gone to Lee, absolutely ripped him apart, gets the ball rolling with the first try. Four more assists, handing pretty much everything. Leads the competition now, 17 try assists, he's played 10 games. It's ridiculous. Yep. He's had an influence in every game he's played. He's put tries on a plate, even in defeat. Wigan, obviously, he gave the ball to Adam Swift, even in the St. Helens defeat. He puts a kick it to Mahir Finua to score. And obviously, one for Adam Swift to score. You think Leeds in victory, that cut-out pass again to Adam Swift, who obviously has been the beneficiary of some decent service from fullback. I mean, you ought to see a better pass than that this season. That was phenomenal. But he does it week in, week out. The talent at his disposal is absolutely ridiculous. He makes it look effortless. That's the thing. It's all natural. Just naturally skillful, naturally blessed, if you like. And to not be in that England squad, obviously we ranted about that all season, but then to actually come in a situation when you're playing against England. If I'm Jake Connor right now, you can sort of look at it two ways. One of them, option one is where you say, stick it, I'm going to play for all. But option two is you're thinking, right, Sean Wayne, I'm going to show you what an absolute pleb you are now, and I'm going to try and rip your side apart. Yeah. Jake Connor being who he is will probably go for the latter.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's his perfect opportunity, isn't it? Perfect opportunity. And history is littered with players that were freakish talents that never got a run, in a Great Britain side.
Lee
Paul
Breeze.
Cook, as an example. Do you know? And plenty of others that, of players that were supremely titled, talented, but never quite got a run. I mean, arguably Danny Houghton. Should have been in the England setup, the Great Britain setup for 3 or 4 years. I mean, he's had a lot of good hookers in front of him, but you've got to take him on the bench or whatever. Snead, the same. How is Snead not in an England squad?
Well, the Snead one's baffled me anymore, especially even now, but more when he was in his absolute prime. You're thinking, he's tailor-made for International Rugby League, because International Rugby League is predominantly conservative and it is about set for set and getting on top of your opposition with a good kicking game and also a good defence. Snead brings
he's got
that.
The kicking game.
Exactly. It's like, come on, boys.
What
do you watch every week?
This is what pisses me off, mate, is that, is it because they're playing for an unfashionable side in Hull? And if that's the case, and because, we've had, your Sean Wayne's in charge of the thing, who's very Lancastrian and very Wigan focused and very west of the fucking of the Pennines focused. Is it because it's Sean Wayne? But arguably, they never got picked under McNamara either, or under Bennett. But is the fact that they're playing for Hull, which is a so-called unfashionable side, does that then hurt our recruitment of English players? Do people look at Hull and go, "I'm not going there because if I go there, I won't get picked for England"?
Makes you wonder. But then I sort of look at it, barring a handful of years, we haven't been good enough, have we? That's also a ruthless evaluation. You think, barring two cup winning years, barring a grand final year, barring a couple of good runs in the playoffs in the early 2000s, we haven't been up there, have we? And that's what it is.
But 16 and 17, right, when we were right up there and we should have won the comp that year, 16, there was still no Watts, there was still no Tag.
Taylor was in 2016, but he played against Scotland. He didn't play. He played against Scotland and France. Didn't play against Australia and New Zealand. So it's sort of like it. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There were nowhere to be seen. So I don't know. But I mean, at the end of the day, I'm the same as you. I love my international football. I really do. I love international rugby league. I really get a kick out of watching England play, Australia play, New Zealand, especially over here. I think it's fantastic. But at the end of the day, my first allegiance will always be with Hull FC. And if Hull players don't get picked, I can kind of live with that. The problem is it's not up to me, is it? The problem is, can the players live with that?
That's the thing,
Players want to be living in the, you know, they want to be playing in the pinnacle and they want to be playing for their country. And if coming to Hull means that they can't, well, then does that harm our recruitment? Well, yeah, I think it does.
Well, I completely agree with that. I always remember the first Exiles game when England played the Exiles in 2010. And Hull's Craig Fitzgibbon and Marco O'Mealy both got picked. And they're both saying, yeah, how great is this? You know, we get to come over to UK, play for you know, a good club in Hull, but we also get a bit of, you know, Rec Rugby League. And it is a big deal to players. You know, Jake Connor even said that when he didn't get picked in Sean Wayne's first squad when he took the job last year. It was only a training squad. But he even said then it hurt him. You know, this is a player who wants to play at the highest level. He wants to play for his country and, you know, in huge World Cup years and, you know, tournaments and what have you. And it is a big thing for a player. You know, an average fan might think, you know what, I don't really give a toss about England and it is club before country. And I get that. It is Hull FC. Hull FC come first, don't get me wrong, every day of the week. But I want England to do well. I enjoy watching England. You know, England test against New Zealand in 2018 were, you know, were brilliant games of rugby. Less said about the Great Britain tour in 2019, you know, the better. But, you know, England have had some belting tests. The World Cup final was an absolute belter of a game. You know, and I love watching England when they, you know, they give it to Australia and obviously we always seem to come up short these days, which is obviously frustrating, but they're still great games to watch, aren't they? The World Cup semi-final 2013, England-New Zealand, was one of the best games I've ever watched, you know, ever. Yeah. That was phenomenal. Yeah. But, yeah, there is a place for international rugby league, and obviously it does mean a big deal to, and this is what I said, you know, about Chris Sattai and Liggy Sow, you know, by all accounts, I'm led to believe that they have been picked for the England squad. Obviously, we're recording this and the Exile squad, not the England squad, dear me. Obviously, we're recording this and they still haven't become official yet. But from a selfless point of view, I look at it, right, Chris Sattai deserves nothing less because he's the best prop in sub league right now.
He's the form forward in the league, absolutely.
And you could probably argue with Licky Sowers as well because he's doing the work of two or three blocks as well right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So you think, you know what? As much as it's frustrating that you're potentially not going to be playing for Hull FC, you've earned that right to go, you know, play in a rec rugby league game. That is a bit of a farce and obviously is horrifically timed and what have you, but it's sort of like a personal reward for that, you know, for them blokes as a player. And it's take your out and you say, well done. Obviously, it doesn't take, you know, anything off the fact that I say it's very frustrating for, you know, us as with club allegiances. Obviously, I'm guessing... Yeah. Broughton will be fuming, you know, Adam Pearson will be fuming.
Oh, totally. We surely must be investigating trying to get the game against Huddersfield postponed. We must be.
Well,
you know, we took our only 19 fit players to Leigh, didn't we?
Eight. We named an 18-man squad. Ben McNamara was the one that didn't play. So you take them three blocks out, that's 15. You bring Jude Ferreira in, that's 16. You're then, you know,
and
scrapping the boat.
Cater.
Yeah, if Cater comes back, there's your 17, yeah. It's
that's skinny.
Yeah, very skinny.
That's skinny and without the two best forwards in the league.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and like you say, you're already missing your two centres as well. And, you know, you can go in a right pissing contest there, can't we? We're missing Scott Taylor, you know, Josh Borden obviously would help. I mean, we could be going into the game against Huddersfield with middles of Brad Fash, Jordan Lane, Jack Brown. And then you're going to have to ask someone like Jordan Johnston to play as a prop because we've got no one else.
Yeah. I mean it's late on now, but I mean, is there any chance of us dipping into the loan market, do you think? Is there such a thing as a loan market?
Yeah, there is a such a thing as a loan market. Yeah, I know from Rovers, Will Dagger has just gone to Featherstone and he played on Sunday for Featherstone. So there is a loan market, obviously. Yeah. Our Fijian, Mitch Mitalai. Village of Kipani, obviously. Yeah, that's right.
It tends to be players going that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, not the other way, but...
is the problem.
Yeah, I think a couple of St Helens youngsters went to Salford a few weeks ago as well, so there is a loan market, but it's where you can use it, and obviously there's the LAV cap and there's all them loopholes to get around, didn't they? And I think LAV tried. They did try to bring people in, you know, a couple of props, but it's also finding the right man, isn't it? You don't just want to bring anyone in. You want to bring someone that's going to add to your squad. I mean, even if it is for a few weeks, and I think, obviously, Hull haven't been too fond of obviously what they've found in that market, and that's why they haven't signed anyone, which is fair play. I suppose you can live with it, and it's sort of that also ties in, you know, what we expect of Hull FC this year, and we've said, you know, we just want improvement week on week. We've got that. We don't expect Hull FC to reinvent the wheel and win the league and win the grand final, but we do expect them to compete in every game, show some fight, defensive improvement, attacking improvement, set some foundations, ticked all those boxes. You know, I'm looking at Hull FC season right now and it's absolute roaring success for me. It really is, because it's completely different. We don't get smashed anymore. You can guarantee that the whole side will turn up. I mean, even when they're poor, you know, the Catalan zone game, they weren't great, but they're still in the contest up to 70 minutes. Unfortunately, Catalans get two late tries and the score looks a little bit, you know, a little bit of a blowout when it won. You know, St. Helens away, you sort of think, okay, they rolled us, fair enough, it happens. But you know, other than that, we've been in every single game and we've looked very good for it as well. So, yeah, very, very content with where Hull are. Obviously, that, again, comes back off, you know, our biggest win since 2013 against Lee, 64-22. I mean, there's some stats in itself there. I think that was our... Yeah, as I say, the first time since 2013 we scored 60 points in a league game. You have to go back to 2017, the cup winning against Catalans, and that was basically Catalans' A side. It was basically their French elite competition side that night. We beat them 62-0. You know, you got to go back to your 2004 days where we put 82 past Salford, you know, 70 past Widnes. Yeah,
it's the most. Is it the most points we've ever scored in Lancashire?
Yeah, that's right. Well? Yeah, we'll put some interesting stuff out. Yeah, it was the sixth highest points total in the Super League era as well, which was. You know, so it doesn't happen regularly, does it? And this is why it does warrant some praise, you know, old win at Lee.
Cause yeah, totally.
We're not a side that does that. We're not a side that, you know, chucks the ball about, you know, with a purpose, you know, from side to side and scores points for fun. That isn't what Hull FC are about, and or hasn't been what Hull FC are about. And when we do see it, we've got to cherish it because, as I say, it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. No, very true. Very true. I still don't like us conceding as many points as we did. But
you get that in blowouts though sometimes, don't you?
You do.
It was a very fast game, must be said. It was a dry track, obviously. The sun, it was a, you know, a warm day, it was a mild day at least, and it was a day for, you know, fast open rugby. And you say when the game's as open as that and you are getting tries left, right and centre, and the game's obviously already won. I mean, what do we, you know, thinking he's conceded four tries, two of them were virtually in the last 10-15 minutes. I wasn't asked, you know. So if we lead 22 points, because I know that when the defence needs to be, it's been bang at it this year, and we've seen that in games at Leeds. We, you know, we've seen it right at the start of the year in games against Warrington, Wigan in the cup. Obviously, the defence was outstanding. So when it needs to be, you know, that's been the biggest improvement, and all, we all know that. So I wasn't bothered. It was just, it was all about the 12 tries and the 64 points and the manner of the victory. And, you know, obviously we've all seen the clips on social media of that Jack Brown try when it goes through 10 pairs of hands and the little flicks from Savelio, you know. Josh Reynolds involved in everything, you know, putting passes out. And, you know, you're not going to see a better team try than that in Super League this year. It was absolutely phenomenal. Then you got Jake Connor, you know, like making it look effortless, putting Andrea Savelio through holes, you know, no-look passes. You know, you've got Adam Swift chiming in at fullback when Jake Connor goes off for a head assessment. And what a player he is, Adam Swift, you know. Breaking away, scoring long-distance tries. You know, how nice is it to see Brett Freeman get walk-ins as well? It's just...
Yeah.
You know, things like that. When do our wingers get walk-ins? I think Brett Freeman, you know, he got obviously pounced on the loose ball at Featherstone to score a try. You know, gets a walk-in this week. Adam Swift's had a few walk-ins. That's unheard of for a left-side wingers. That usually they have to barge over or do something brilliant to score. But they're just doing Greg Eden tries now, catching the ball and putting it down. It's great.
Yeah, Greg Eden. They tried to call him when he went to Brisbane. They called him the English Billy Slater. Yeah, right up. Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, worked out well, didn't it?
Yeah, didn't it just? Yeah.
But, yeah. Rugby league. Well, the English Billy Slater. Yeah, as I say, like, you can, you know, people went into that game on Saturday worried. That's a funny thing now looking back. You know, people say, no, this is potential banana skin. It's not going to be easy as people thought. I wrote a preview, said all by 16, and someone said, Dan, I don't share your optimism. Well, turns out they've just won by 42 points.
Fully admit, I think I said it in the podcast last week. I think I said, you know, they're not as bad as no wins in a season suggests. You know, they've run a lot of teams close.
They chuck the ball about. And, you know, the champs they're on, they'll chuck it about.
Yeah, yeah. They're just lacking a bit of class, aren't they? They're lacking some genuine class.
Yeah. And I mean. It's the physicality. Like I say, they just couldn't match all physically. You know, all just too fast, too strong. You know, Maif knew how to field it. Even a couple of errors didn't faze him. They just couldn't handle him. Manuel Mau was outstanding as well. Andrea Savelio getting three tries. As I say, Josh Reynolds handing everything. Chris Satai, wrecking ball. Jake Connor, best player on the pitch by a country mile. It's just, it was just nice to actually, you know, watch Hull open a side up like that and have the shackles off and just, you know, play some rugby. And the great thing about it is Hull were absolutely ruthless. They didn't give a crap about Lee. They just kept going and they were clinical. And it's like what we said, all, you know, and especially last week we mentioned about execution at Castleford and how we, you know, even when we made mistakes early doors against Castleford, we still backed our shape and we still backed our structure, and eventually it paid off and we got the points. Against Lee, everything just clicked from the start. You know, every our shape, as I say, our shape was good, our structure was good, but our execution was absolutely bob on. We really were. We were absolutely ruthless.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's good to see, mate, and that's a mark of a good team. You know, how many times have we said that? That, you know, we should have been kicking on. You know, it's the exact opposite to what happened in that game that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, you know, under Radford, when we played London at home, and we were miles up at half-time and took our foot right off the gas and let them back into it.
And how frustrating was that? Take our foot. At full time.
Yeah, and we didn't take our foot off the gas this time, did we? And, you know, with a team that arguably, if you'd have told us that starting 13 at the start of the season, we'd have gone, what, really? Where's Carlos? What, really? You know, where's Griffin? What really? You know, and then you look at that team and you'd go, wow, okay. Wow. And that team is a team that's put a record score on, you know, out for us for the last 6-7 years or whatever. It's good. It's great, mate. And it shows our strength in depth. The problem is that we haven't got a lot of depth. That's the thing. We operate a very skinny squad. The quality that we've got, it goes down as far as this. And, you know, any player that's in our squad at the moment, you're happy for them to pull on a black and white jersey. You're not looking down the list and going, oh, God, I hope they don't pick him. Like we have had years before with players. You know, this is good now. This is getting to the point where you look at it and you go, on any given day, we can beat any team. I truly believe that. We could beat any team in that league. We just got to get it right on the day, you know. And that's why I thought we were a good bet for the cup, because I honestly thought, I mean, simple as, you know, Cass won't win that final. Guaranteed, you know, the winner of our semi-final was always going to be the one that wins the cup. I think, and you know, we were bloody close. You know, we came right back in that game and probably could have won it and probably should have won it. You know, if Connor's pass sticks, we beat him. So you know, it's just at the moment, mate. I like what I'm seeing from Hull. Yeah, we need some troops desperately to come back, and we're not going to get them back because injuries are longer term. You know, I mean, Griffin's out for the season. Matongo's out for the season. You know, Bowden's, what, 6 weeks away? You know, how far's Tag away? Another 4 weeks?
Yeah, three weeks. Yeah,
you know, so, I mean, it's going to be a while before we get bodies back. So we've got to preserve what we've got. And unfortunately, Satai and Sal playing for an All-Stars team worries me.
Yeah, Steve Prescott. Yeah, you're sort of thinking, oh, Christ, not again. History has a habit of repeating itself, but Christ, God forbid, anything happens to, you know, just want a clean bill of health, don't we, from that game. And
Yeah,
you're absolutely nil on the head for me there. You know, like I said last week, we're not far off at all. We're definitely heading in the right direction. We've ticked loads of boxes this year. We've definitely shown improvement under Hodgson. It's just about kicking on now, isn't it? And with your strength and depth point, you know, I looked at Owen and thought, you know, the strength and depth, it's not great, but it's a lot better than I gave it credit for. Because you're thinking right now, we've just lost two centres in Carlos, Tumuvavi and Josh Griffin. Put Maya Fanua as one. Obviously, you got Swift and Brett Freeman on the wings. You put Connor Winning at centre. That was the biggest surprise of the weekend. He was outstanding. His footwork was phenomenal. You know, he was jinking himself out of tackles. Yeah, he was brilliant. And the catch and pass for Freeman's try was, you know, was as good as anything you'll see this year. Backing up Jake Connor's break, you know, as I say, he's no slouch. He's a bloody quick little lad. And, you know, backing up that try was great, you know, great to see. And he came into the side and he was brilliant. Jack Brown as well was good. I mean, I like Jack Brown. He's, you know, he's got huge potential. He's still a little bit raw, we all know that. Obviously, still got a lot to learn, maybe in defence in particular. But he impresses me every time I watch him. You know, he was obviously backed up the crazy move to score that try. And, you know, he went well. You know, a couple of offloads in there as well. He's a dangerous young player. Good to see.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally, mate. And you know, just wish we had three or four more like him. That's the issue. If we just need a couple more, you know. And you know, it's the point is now that Fash was probably at the start of the season, you know, going to be a fashion cater probably at the start of the season. You'd look at and go, you know, and Lane probably as well, you know, around the fringes of first grade. And now they're practically the first names on the team sheet, aren't they? I mean, it's just that they're going to play. You know, Brown, you maybe thought this year might have made maybe 5 or 6 appearances. He's likely to make 10 or 15 or 20, you know, just because of the way that things have panned out with injuries and stuff. So it's good that we're blooding them now, you know, because we'll need them in years to come. I mean, you know, your point with Fash is that, you know, he's what, 25, 26, 27?
Yeah, 25,
you know. So, I mean, he needs to be playing week in, week out now, which, and it's good that he is, you know. But, you know, Lane's younger than that. Brown's younger than that. You know, McNamara's younger than that. Wynn's younger than that. It's good, you know, unfortunately, you know, and Scott as well, unfortunately, being injured. But you know, it's great that they're getting game time, and also not letting us down. You know, not one of those guys has let us down.
No, absolutely. They've all come in and they've added something. You know, Cam Scott, you know, took a few pelters after that Catalans game, but he had 2 good performances in the cup game against Saints, obviously, where he scored a try and looked good at Castleford before his injury. You know, Jack Brown's come in, he's looked good. Conor Wynn was excellent. You know, as I say, Ben McNamara's looked very assured. I mean, you think, what, he's 19 years old and he's that composed already as a halfback. I mean, he's got a future, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, we've got some good players coming through. We've got a good squad, as I say. We're not far off at all. You know, we bang it every week, bang that drum, but you get a couple of middles next year and we're right up there. You know, when you've got a half-back combination as good as ours with Reynolds and Sneed, you've got Jake Connor, who's arguably the best player in the competition, some cracking back row forwards, you know, Andres Cervelio, Manu Mau, who again, you know, Manu Mau has been outstanding the past few weeks. He runs the ball in like water on rock. It's just hard as nails. You know, if you had him running at you, you'd absolutely crap yourself.
Yeah, he's actually starting to fulfil the potential that we signed him, you know? It's good. Yeah, we need him to carry on doing that, because I think, I mean, the temptation is that you even play him a prop, you know, and maybe put Farimo in the second row or something.
No, the way things are going right now, could you actually see Huddersfield Friday night, maybe like a Bretta stepping up to play in the forwards because we've got no one else, and you put Jude on the wing maybe, or the Fijian on the wing?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I reckon Farimo might do all right in the second row. I wouldn't put Maher there because I don't think his hands are safe enough, but I think Farimo would.
We're actually getting to ludicrous territory where we actually might need to consider a few things like that for this week. That's how desperate it is, but... Yeah, when you look at our squad, we're really not far off. When everyone's fit and firing, as I say, we get the right signings, the right recruitment, which I think we are doing. You know, we've got the right type of wingers now in Adam Swift, and off all rumours are to believe in Daniel McIntosh. You know, there's no substitute for speed, as we've seen with Swift this year. And say we get a couple of middles, and you know, we're gonna be right up there for me. I really do believe that with the way, you know, the qualities that obviously Hodgson's installed into this squad, and that probably. He comes in to a perfect chance to do our NRL out of contract prop list, which you've come up with.
Yeah, I have, yeah. So you have to bear with me because it's quite a long list.
Good, so need some options.
Well, this is good. There are some options. Now, there are some that I'd look at and go, I don't think we've got a chance. But then there are some that I'd look at and go, that's our type of player. And you know, that's, you know, the kind of people that we'd be looking at. Now, in the kind of the younger end, you've got Jai Whitbread at the Titans and Ofahiki Ogden from the Bulldogs. They're a little bit younger, and the likelihood is that they'll probably pick up another club over here, I'd say, because they are young and have made the debut fairly young and will probably... Even if they pick up a team in the lower end of the league, if they pick up a Tigers or a Bulldogs or something like that, because the Bulldogs have got a hell of a lot of players out of contract, but not many forwards, so they need to bolster their packs. There is a Bulldogs forward out of contract there, and that's Dylan Napper. So he's unsigned for next year. He's probably the biggest name of all of these that is unsigned for next year, and he'd do a really good job. And he is one that's been pinged a lot for the head high and for the, you know, the current crackdown on dangerous tackles. So he might be one that'd think, you know, go to England where it's a little bit less policed. Other big names, so I think the one we've mentioned several times is Aaron Woods, at Cronulla, ex-West Tigers. Meter-eating prop, hits hard in the tackle. You know, he's a possibility for us. Denamus Louis at the Raiders as well. He's a good prop that might fit Hull's remit for someone who can make a lot of meters and hits hard in defence. Tepai Moroa from Melbourne is available at the end of the year as well. But the two that I think we're more likely to get, Thomas McKayley from the West Tigers, he's out of contract. Now, he's come through the West Tigers system, and he's not a bad player. He's kind of suffered a little bit because he's had players in front of him that have been playing better than him, and then Tigers have gone out and signed other people and stuff. He's still only 23, 24. He's Samoan. He's only ever played for the Tigers. Good, big, rangy, you know, 6'4", 110, 115 kilos. He'd do a good job for Hull. And there's also, obviously, the West Tigers connection with Brett Hodgson, who would know him from him coming through the ranks of the Tigers. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if we've been on the phone to Thomas McKayley. And the other one, if we want to go down the line of completing a threesome of our New Zealanders, is Lee Sanamau from the Warriors. Obviously, he'd know Satai and Sau very well. He's a good prop, Lee Sanamau. Again, over 6 foot. He's played for a few clubs, played for the Cowboys as well as the Warriors. He's Samoan, and you know, he's another one that that would be good, hard running, you know, 60 minutes a game prop.
Yeah, there's some very good options there in the direction that all want to take, and it's not like the short, there's a save a few players to look at, and we all know that's what we need. We need middles for next year, and that's going to be the focus on recruitment. It's nice to see us go in a direct, you know, different direction with our wingers, our outside backs. And obviously, we've brought our big money half in this year, and Josh Reynolds, who's really starting to click into gear now. Shocker, we get a bit of ball, you know, a bit of good ball. Interesting to see Hodgson say as well that the two performances that Jake Connors had the past 2 weeks against Carson Lee, it's actually coincided with Hull actually having the most time in possession with the ball and produced the most passes as they have all season. It's sort of like, you know, you cut down on the errors, you play through your sets, you obviously chance your hand when the opportunity allows, and it's almost like that's a recipe for success, isn't it? But it's definitely panning out like that. That's another thing against Lee. We cut out those daft errors, and like I say, there was a couple early in the game, but you know, there were very few and far between, which again is good to see, because that was one area of Hull's game where you're thinking, you know, in the St. Helens, the Leeds away, I know obviously the conditions at Leeds away were horrible, but you're thinking maybe a few old habits are creeping back in. And I know old habits die hard, but I think we definitely are a more professional outfit now than we were this time last year and certainly the year before. So you'd like to think that, you know, they will be cut out and that will continue, and Hull will bear the fruits of it, because, you know, summer rugby, obviously that massive cliche, drier tracks, all paves, you know, for that attacking brand of rugby that we want to play. And obviously we saw that at Lee. It was just so good to watch. You just can't really emphasise that enough. It was a joy to watch Hull FC again. It wasn't stressful or anything like that. You just sort of sat back, relaxed and revelled in it.
And you know, I mean, to the point that we've made all season as well, mate, that's built on forwards. All of that. The reason that we've got that time and the reason that we can afford to be expansive is that we're earning the right to be expansive by what we're doing in the forwards. 100%.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I agree. And like you say, when you've got the best prop in the league, Chris Satai, obviously announced the 2-year deal last week. That's fully deserved. Hopefully his best mate, Liggy Sal, that deal will obviously follow hopefully soon. And like I say, things are looking really good. It's just a shame that we've ranted so long about the administration of the game, because you think rugby league players are phenomenal. You know, the stresses they put their bodies through week on week to play this game. It really is. What they do is nothing short of phenomenal. And then you think how the game's governed. It makes a mockery of the efforts they go through sometimes. And as I say, last week we did a segment of the podcast talk about England and what we want to see in England. And I want to see England play rugby. You know, I want to see England play fixtures. We all do. But Not at the detriment of a regular round in Super League, not at the detriment of our club, Hull FC, not, you know, farcically timed in a COVID world in the UK, you know, not thrown together at the last minute. Totally. We want to see it thought out.
Yeah. No, totally agree. Totally agree. It's got to be right. It's got to be 100% right for us. And it's not at the moment. They just seem to be, just picking anything out of the ether and just going, oh, that'll do. You know, I don't think that's great.
No, it's not a good look. It's not, and you're sort of thinking right now, with the head-eye stuff in the NRL, I mean, any of these listeners, if any of our listeners actually watch the NRL, you'll know exactly where we're coming from, and some of the sin bins that you see right now, again, Takioho's at the weekend was nothing short of disgraceful. And that's coming from a Penrith fan. You know, I'm saying that as a Penrith fan. That benefited my team massively. You know, we got the ascendancy after that and scored 38 unanswered points. So... massively helped Penrith, but it was an absolute joke, and if that's the way the game's going, people will walk away from it. They'll get fed up, they'll go elsewhere. Hopefully, Super League could bear some fruits there, in terms of players. Like you say, if they get absolutely fed up and sort of ring their agent up and go, right, I've had enough of this, take me to Super League. But then, on the other hand, Super League usually follows what the NRL implements. They did with set restart, they did with, obviously, the shoulder charge and things like that. So it's probably only a matter of time before we do see that in Super League. And crikey, it will kill the game. We have got the people to stand up for it, though, because Barry and Terry will have an absolute meltdown on Sky every week.
I think that, like I said, I think I've said this a couple of times now, is that the major issue that everyone's got is that they're all waiting for this first time that someone tests it in court for head injuries. That's, you know, that once there's a precedent, a legal precedent for it, then everyone they're going to pile on. And I think they're just trying everything they can to look like they're good corporate citizens and look like they're good people.
Yeah.
And then we'll just have to see. We'll just have to see where we go from there.
Yeah, and I get it, mate. It's all part of this victim culture that we've got in society right now. And sometimes I think we also need to get a grip and
Especially in Australia, especially in New South Wales.
Well, I remember you telling me about the drinking stuff when you work in a bar in Australia, what you mentioned on the podcast a few weeks ago. It's absolutely crazy, that.
Yeah, and it's true.
Backwards.
It's true. Yeah, it is. It is. You know, you fall off your stool because you're pissed in a pub. It's the barman's fault for serving you and the landlord's fault for employing the barman and not training him properly.
Not the pissed up dickhead who's just caused the scene in the bar. It's not his fault.
There's no personal responsibility. It's not a concept in Australian law, personal responsibility.
Absolutely nuts. Really is.
Someone's fault. It's always someone's fault.
And every rugby league player, whether you play for Melbourne Storm in the NRL, whether you play for Hull FC in Super League, whether you play for Hull Dockers in the National Conference, bloody Lambeth Lions in the London District League, you know the risks when you take that field as a rugby league player. It's a contact sport. Sometimes you get injured. Sometimes you get hurt. It's part and parcel of it. To go victim blaming like that and, you know, court and legal shit, it just does not sit well with me at all. It's a really dangerous road to cross. And like I say, with the way that the game's going right now, it is going to be unrecognisable. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still a brilliant product and we absolutely love it, but it's a different game to what I remember 10 years ago when you got Sam Berger smacking the shit out of Furry Moimoi. Don't see stuff like that now, do we? And it's changing. You know, you'll probably look at it and think, well, I remember Les Boyd and Lee Crooks going toe-to-toe, you know, Australia all those years ago, and you're thinking it's a completely different game to what it was then as well.
Oh, totally. again, though, is it a better game? Yeah, I don't know.
I look at it now, like, people are saying, oh, look how good Tommy Turbo is, you know, he's probably the best player I've ever seen and all that. I'll tell you what, if Greg Inglis played now, in his prime, obviously, I know he allegedly does play still for Warrington, apparently, when he can be bothered, but, you think a prime, in prime, 10 years ago, Greg Inglis, in the NRL right now, would score every time he touches the bloody ball.
Yeah.
That's where we are now. Right. The game's so open, and as I say, how can you get a roll on where you score 48 unanswered points in the second half? You know, Manly against Gold Coast at the weekend. Again, Penrith get a little bit of roll on, obviously helped by, like I say, a bullshit sin bin, a couple of set restarts, and next minute, the 38-12 up and cruising. I don't know. The way the game swings now, and I know it's not all down to the rules and the fact that, you know, you've got the set restarts and your bullshit sin bins and your bullshit send-offs. It does actually tie in the fact that some teams are actually rubbish in a basket case. You know, obviously, your poor mob, after winning your grand final 2 weeks ago, leaking 66 points at Melbourne, that was obviously tough viewing, but and I mentioned it a few weeks ago, didn't I? The top and bottom thing in the NRL, it's huge. It's probably, when you think the top eight in 2018 was separated by 2 points, you had the top four all on equal points, you had fifth to eighth on all equal points. How far away now, in 3 years, has it gone? You've got probably Melbourne and Penrith that can win it. You've got Parramatta and South just beyond that. Maybe Sydney Roosters too. But the rest are an absolute mile away.
No, totally. It's basically, it's Melbourne, Penrith and the rest, isn't it? It really is at the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Yeah. It's sad. In Super League, it's sort of the same. You've got your centre. If we're being absolutely brutally honest, you've got St Helens, Wigan, Warren, St Catalans. Hull are probably the best of the rest at a push. We can maybe beat one of those on our day. As I say, we drew with Warrington. We beat Wigan in the cup, but we're not a top side right now. We have the potential. All the tools are there to make us into a top side. We've got a cracking coach, as I say, in Hodgson. I'd say all the foundations are there to really make a crack of this if we recruit the right players. But are we a top side right now? Probably not. I mean, there's a gulf in Super League as well, don't get me wrong. I mean, your Wakefields, your Salfords, your Huddersfields are obviously flat to deceive this year. Are a mile off. And then you look at Rovers. You know, everyone thought they'd be, pretty much second to bottom. They've won 6 games now. They're practically safe when we're only 10 games in.
Yeah. Well, I saw that. I did see someone put that on Twitter. Rovers are safe. Jesus Christ.
Level there.
There you go. There's your ambition. Yeah. Rovers are safe.
Absolute Jesus levels. Christ. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah, less words and more, and it pretty much sums up that club. Nice to see a couple of our listeners say they actually enjoyed the Rovers bashing we dished out last week. Obviously, with the derby coming up, there'll definitely be more of that. So don't worry on that front, but we'll finish as always with our NRL Hull FC club connections. And this week, we have gone for the original St George side.
Yes, yeah. I thought, we did Illawarra last week. I thought I'd do the original St George this week, and then we can do St George Illawarra Dragons next week. Because there's quite a few, actually. A couple of them will be mentioned next week as well, because they were on the cusp of St George becoming St George Illawarra, which I think you three or four here at the top end of this, which will be certainly there, which are Luke Felsch, who played for us. He was one of the Gateshead contingent that came down in 2000, big rangy forward. Nathan Blacklock, obviously, played for St George. And Tony Grimaldi, who was our captain 2001-2002. They're all St George and St George Illawarra players as well, I think. Damien McGarry, we mentioned him a couple of weeks ago, but Damien McGarry played for St George after leaving Hull after winning us the Premiership in 91. And now, here's something that I found out that I couldn't believe. Richard Gay played one game for St George in 1994.
One game
in the NRL, Richard Gay. Now, I think what he's done there is he's followed Brian Smith after Brian Smith's left, and he might have done like a closed season over there, and they've drafted him in for one game, maybe right at the back end of the season, I think.
Yeah.
But Richard Gay played for them in 1994. Which completely blew my mind. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I honestly had no idea that he played for an NRL team. No idea at all. But there you go. Apparently he did. One game, and he played against the Roosters, and they won. That was the only game he played, and he won in that game. It was round 12, St George 46, Sydney Roosters 0, and he came off the bench. So there you go. And I had no idea about that. That shocked me. In fact, I've probably spent more time making sure that that's right than I have researching the rest of it. But yeah, apparently it is. Ivan Henjak, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Peter Spring, who we mentioned last week because he played for Illawarra. Chuck Heron, goal-kicking winger that we had in 2000, one of the ex-Gateshead players, Ian Heron. And then there's another one as well. A guy called Peter Hall, who played for Hull as a reserve standoff in the Hull team around 79 to about 81. Hardly ever got a game for Hull, and played one game again for the Dragons in about 1984. And I can't find any other information other than that But he definitely was a Peter Hall who played for Hull in the early 80s and also played for St George in the early 80s. So if anyone's got any other information on that, I'd be really, really, I'd be really happy to get that, because that was a really unusual one as well. Then a couple of coaches as well. Peter Gentle was a player for St George and obviously coached us. And Brian Smith played and coached St George and obviously coached us as well. We mentioned Brian Smith last week. And then the other two names are Herb Gilbert, who we've obviously spoken about quite a few times, first overseas captain to ever lift the Challenge Cup. And his son, Herb Gilbert Jr., played for St George. And it was the fact that Herb Gilbert Jr. was picked over another player that led to Herb Gilbert Sr. losing his job as head coach at St George. He was accused of favouritism because he picked his son, and that's when he lost his position in the 50s. And also Keith Gittos, who played for Hull in the 50s, he was a St George stalwart as well. So there you go, quite a few there, and there'll be a few more next week with St George Illawarra.
No, good stuff, mate, absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, if you know anything about Peter Hall, it's really getting on my nerves because I can't place him. And I'm really proud of the fact that I know Hull sides from the 80s almost backwards. But it's doing my head in.
Yeah, that'll be one for the listeners if they can point anything out. But yeah, good list, that, really good. Obviously, that's one of the foundation clubs. It goes back a long way. Obviously, not all the way back to when the game was invented in 1895, as must be reiterated time and time again, because the Aussies actually do think they invented the game in 1908, but no,
yes, they do.
Contrary to speculation, it was played for 13 years before that in the UK.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Well done. You've got to get it in every week.
I have, yeah, because it does wind me up. Well, you can tell. Yeah, a lot of things wind me up about rugby league at the moment. It's like, why do you watch it, Dan, if it stresses you out this much? And sometimes I think, you know what, I don't know, why do I? But it's a burning love for LFC, isn't it? It's that never-ending obsession with the early birds, with the black and whites, and it never leaves you. You know, you can be sat in West Hull, as I am right now, going to every game when COVID permits, as I have done for the past 8 or 9 years, or you can be 10,000 miles away in northern New South Wales. You know, that obsession, it never leaves, does it?
No, and the day that it does leave is the day that you stop. And that's not going to happen with me. And I don't think it's going to happen with you either.
No. Sad, I think, is the word. Me mum, you was his.
Yeah, well, that's it. I said to you the other week, you know, like my wife and my kids look at me, why do you watch it? All you do is complain about it. You just call them names. You just scream at the TV. Why do you watch it? Yeah, you've got to watch it.
But yeah, that's it. And literally, that's all we've done. An hour is rant about the greatest game of all, because it is still that. And even though, as I say, the set restarts infuriate me every week, the head eye stuff in the NRL infuriates me every week. Stuff like Jake Connor fastly thrown in against England for an exile side winds me up. The fact that we're now playing a supposed international game in the height of a mini COVID crisis in Sub League infuriates me and winds me up. It's a never ending cycle, really. It wouldn't be rugby league if it didn't wind us up.
And, you know, we wouldn't have anything to talk about on a weekly podcast, would we?
Well, yeah, exactly. It fuels the fire, doesn't it?
It does. Long may it continue.
Absolutely. And as I say, Hull FC's resurgence under Brett Hodgson. You know, as I say, we're definitely heading in the right direction. And as always, long may that continue. And thanks for your time, mate. Come on, you will.
Nice one. Cheers.